I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A recent book tells us a story of a hero of the Second World War and someone who made his way to British Columbia to teach and impact our environmental and protection policies in Canada. The book is called Vladimir Krajina, World War II Hero and Ecology Pioneer. Krajina was a botanist born in what is now the Czech Republic in 1905. He was a member of the Czech resistance during the Second World War, became a leader in the fight against Nazi aggression. There were many near misses when it came to his life. He was captured and imprisoned, even sentenced to death. The book reads like a novel in some parts. He comes to Canada after the war, becoming a professor at the University of British Columbia, and goes on to a distinguished career in academia. He becomes the father of the British Columbia Ecological Reserve Program, something that reflects his long-standing environmental concern, which is then copied throughout Canada. He is honored in this country for his endeavors with honorary degrees and the Order of Canada, and returns to Prague in 1990 to receive the Order of the White Lion, the Czech Republic's highest honor. I'll ask my guest now, the author of this book, to tell us about Krajina's fascinating and eventful life, how he knew Krajina, and how this book came about. This book is a welcome addition to the world of biography, but also the story of British Columbia. The author, Jan Drabek, has also lived an extraordinary life. He was born in Prague, served in the U.S. Navy, and was a journalist and broadcaster throughout the world. He first came to Canada in 1965 and worked as a high school teacher, as well as a travel agent and writer. He has since written nearly 20 books in both English and Czech, and is a former president of the Federation of BC Writers and a former member of the Governing Council of the Writers' Union of Canada. He returned to Prague in the 1990s to work in government there, as well was the Czech ambassador to Kenya and Albania. His life is more fascinating than just that, and he'll be publishing a memoir later this year. Until then, this book on Vladimir Krajina is published by Ronsdale Press. JanDrabek.com is the website for more. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Jan Drabek. Ambassador Drabek, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for asking me.
I really enjoy this book, as I said before we started taping this interview. I'm interested to know how this book came about.
Well, the Krajina name has been following me throughout my whole life, and eventually through a very unusual set of circumstances, we ended up in the same place. During the war, he was talked about in my family because my father introduced him before the war to the resistance. My father was working in the resistance at the time, and he brought in Krajina, who turned out to be an exceptional talent for resistance work. For in the Czech Republic, it was mostly informational. They had contacts with various sources, which then they radioed to London for informational purposes. Anyway, eventually the war was over. The communists took over less than 3 years afterwards, and Krajina, being a very strong anti-communist, had to get out across the border skiing. And my family followed him on skis 4 days later to West Germany. Then, of course, I lived in the United States for a long time. He moved on from London to British Columbia, became quite a well-known botanist over here. And in 1965, I found myself marrying a Vancouver girl and moved into Vancouver. So we were living in the same town again, and I saw him quite often at Czech dues, and of course my parents, whenever they came over to visit, were immediately calling him up and getting together with him.
He was a nice guy?
He was, yes, he was a nice guy, but he certainly had his principles, and they sometimes made him look like he was not really a nice guy when he was. For example, this pushing for ecological methods in British Columbia sometimes made him quite unpopular with leading businessmen, the forestry people. But he was a very straightforward, truth-loving type of a character.
And as a family man, he married Marie when?
Somewhere in the 1920s, I think it was, and had his daughter in 1935. She's, by the way, exactly the same age as I am, and she lives not too far away from here. I live in Yale Town. And the son came after the war in 1947, and he is a very well-known emergency surgeon in Burnaby.
And by all accounts, it was a happy marriage and a happy childhood for the kids, right?
Oh, yeah. Kraina died 2 years after his wife, and he just said, there is nothing left for me here anymore with Maria gone. Maria was in a concentration camp because the Gestapo couldn't get him, and suffered, of course, in Ravensbrück in Germany, and was ready to suffer for him, and he decided that he was not going to give himself up to Gestapo, that he just had to continue with his work.
Didn't he die, like, on the same day that his wife died, like, 2 years later?
Yes. I think that was the date, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, the story, yeah. Before we get into the warriors that he lived, because, I mean, that's a whole book right there. What was his early life like? Was he always interested in botany?
Well, he started off being interested, apparently, in medicine. When he fainted the first time seeing a dissection or something, he decided that this was really not his area of study. So he switched into botany. His brother, who, by the way, was killed by the Nazis during World War II, not on account of him, but in a random sort of a murdering spree, had a big collection of plants, and he was interested in it, and just went into botany and achieved some. Already as a student, he got a golden watch from President Masaryk of the Czech Republic. So he was quite a noted botanist. Very soon, he also got a scholarship from Yale University to go and study in Hawaii, and went around the world. He was quite an accomplished guy.
He was allergic, wasn't he? He had hay fever?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the great ironies of all of this, isn't it?
Yeah.
To the war years, he was an integral part of the Czech war resistance, as your father was. What skills did he have that served him well during the war that perhaps sustained him? Because, as I mentioned in the introduction, he had been captured a few times. He'd been, you know, sentenced to death even. Didn't he try to kill himself, too, at one point?
Yes. When he was finally captured, after three very near escapes, during which one of them he was zigzagging through the potato field and his hat got a bullet hole through it, he took cyanide, but since he had been carrying the cyanide on him and close to his body in warmth, apparently it didn't do the job. But his stomach was pumped out, and he used to say how he, during the first few hours afterwards, he had some crazy visions. Like, for example, he saw the world as a negative, you know, the colors were completely different. But he survived that and went on.
Well, what do you think he had in terms of his personality, in terms of the skills that he had as a person?
Oh, okay. His approach to the underground work was very good. For example, he very seldom, practically never went to large meetings. where if somebody was eventually captured, the Gestapo could torture and beat out of them the names of others. So he had a cover name, and nobody practically saw him at these meetings. So that was one advantage. The other one was, as a scientist and as a precise man, he was very good at coding messages to London. The actual sending via Morse code on a radio was done by the military part of the resistance, but he was the one that decided what was going to go as short and informative as possible, because they didn't want to stay on the air too long, and he was good at that and at coding. He was also made some pretty good decisions. Hiding and just generally staying out of the view of the, or at least suspicion of the Gestapo.
And you mentioned the death of his brother Emmanuel. That really shaped his life, didn't it? It haunted him?
Yes, it haunted him apparently until the end of his life, although everybody was telling him there is absolutely no proof that his brother was killed on account of him. What happened was that the Reichsprotector, or the guy who was in charge in Czechoslovakia during the war, occupied Czechoslovakia, Heydrich, was assassinated by Czech patriots. And the Gestapo started raving mad and started killing people at random and picking them up off the street. There were, I think, if I remember correctly, about 150 killed just because they had the same names as the assassins as such. But his brother was picked up at random and shot the same night as a sort of a repayment to the Czechs for what they had done to their beloved leader. And so they had no idea. The Gestapo didn't have time to figure out that they were looking for his brother and that they could have used him perhaps as a hostage.
He also ended up in at Chartwell with Churchill, right?
Well, yes. In 1948, when he escaped from Czechoslovakia, he went to London. His family eventually escaped too, got to London with him, and he was asked to meet with Churchill at Chartwell. And Churchill was fascinated by this guy because he had heard all about him, and he thought that that Krajina would know more about the highest source that the Czech underground had to a Nazi, a guy named Timmel, who was very high up. But Krajina had never met him. He just used to receive messages from him and coded them and kept sending them, kept sending them to London, which to Churchill's mind was just a fascinating story.
There's a terrific aside that you have in the book about how he's Clementine and Winston are taking him around the house, and Winston's showing him his paintings, and he didn't really think very much of them, did he?
No, he was not. Not that Krajina was really that great a judge of art generally, but he just didn't like him.
Yeah. Well, when you knew him and you interviewed him, as you had in all the years that you knew him, you hung out with him in the sort, did you get an idea about what drove him and what his ideas were politically in terms of how he felt? I mean, he fought against Nazi aggression, fascism, and was staunchly anti-communist. Where did that come from?
Well, he came from a generation that lived through the first liberation of Czechoslovakia from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And I think that sort of set them up for life. My father was of the same sort. Now we have freedom and independence, and now we're going to just fight for it like nobody. And they did. The first 20 years of Czechoslovak independence were fairly ideal. They were not what you would call ideal from this point of view, but for the Czechs, They were independent. They were running their own show. They were going. They had a great president, and they had free elections, and it was just to them one of the greatest injustices that the world has ever known was the Munich Agreement and the successive occupation of Czechoslovakia. So they were sort of these types were ready to fight to death for this sort of thing. There is this American Brokaw who calls that World War II generation as the greatest generation. Mm-hmm. Well, Kraina and his ilk certainly belong to it on the European side.
And that's something that we in this part of the world, I guess, tend to have forgotten. As well, you know, with the end of communism, we forgot that there was this resistance to communism after the war, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. The communists never got a majority in Czechoslovakia. The highest they, I think, came up was with 40%, and that was in 1946 when the elation was still great over the fact that it was the Red Army who liberated most of Czechoslovakia. The western part was liberated by General Patton, which had a different idea.
Yeah. So he leaves Czechoslovakia and comes to Canada in the late 40s, right?
1949, yeah.
Yeah. And the reason why he chose this place as opposed to somewhere else?
He had a scholarship from British woman originally. I think she lived in Montreal, but the scholarship was for a European refugee who would then work as at a university. So he British Columbia said, "Yeah, we need this guy. He's a botanist. He speaks English." And so he came over and started off as a very lowly lecturer, temporary lecturer too, because it was at the end of his 2 years or so here, or 2 or 3 years, that he was eventually taken on as staff and had to go through the whole rigmarole to make it all the way up to full professor. At Charles University in Prague, he was the capacitet, they called him over there, the big name already, and here he had to start all over again, but he was ready to, yeah.
And he liked living here?
Oh, he loved British Columbia. It was, I think before he was more interested in flowers. Here he really moved on to the big trees and to ecology as a whole. He had a funny statement that he made at one point. He told to the forestry companies, which were just denuding the forests over here, you know, if you were doing this in Europe, you would have been in jail a long time ago. So that was him. He thought he saw a challenge here, and he certainly, before he even he certainly went after it, even before he the ecological reserves, before the reserves could be planned and executed, he had to go with his students, and he made maps, ecological maps, of all of this province. You know, that was part of his achievement.
Yeah, I went to the reserves website last night, mm-hmm. and he is remembered there. I mean, as one of the founders of it. In terms of that system, the reserve system that he's known for, how did he pull that off? I mean, you've touched on that earlier, that he clashed with a lot of the lumber barons and the sort.
Well, he did have some allies. One of them was the chancellor of UBC at the time, and generally there was the birth of the ecological movement, and this guy had some credentials. You know, he was not somebody who came out of the left field, a wild-eyed youth. He had made, for example, a film of his Hawaii studies. So he made all sorts of, has written all sorts of articles about ecology before. So he had credentials, and he was brought on, and he made use of it.
How is he remembered in the Czech Republic today, in Prague?
Well, at the Botany Institute in Prague, there is a big plaque on the front of the building. The book actually has a picture of it, where he is very much remembered and revered. Unfortunately, they have enough problems, current problems, that I haven't been able to find a translator through the publisher. I could translate myself, that would be no problem, but a publisher who would be interested in this story. It's too bad.
But it is also a story that people in this part of the world, in British Columbia, ought to know about. And I'm wondering, why should we know about Vladimir Krajina?
Well, he is one of those exemplary immigrants who made this country. You know, he came in and set a certain course in his particular field, and that course was followed and still is being followed. The whole ecology movement over here should pay a little bit more attention to Krajina, but I sometimes get a feeling that they like to pay attention to themselves a lot more than to the pioneers who actually brought it about.
You mentioned the son and the daughter that live in this part of the world. There must be grandchildren and great-grandchildren at this point.
Yeah, they're in Toronto mostly.
What do they think of the book?
Well, I haven't heard yet. I will have to... I've heard from the son and from the daughter, of course. They have ordered several books, and the son particularly, who has the same name, periodically comes by, and I signed the books for various of his friends. He seems to be pretty proud of it. And the daughter is now going to the Czech Republic this spring, and apparently she's taking a few books with herself to give out over there.
You know, as I mentioned in the introduction, your own life has been quite fascinating. I spent a lot of time in the last week or so reading up on you as much as I could. And I'm wondering, as a writer, what the process was like to write about yourself. I mean, you've written memoirs about, you know, working in the diplomatic service, about being a teacher, and now, you know, a part of your heritage. Do you find that writing is therapeutic or enhances, say, the memories of one's life?
Well, I wish I could say that I was a modest type who hates to write about himself. I don't think I could be classified as such. I think I've been thrown about into so many different situations that I enjoy writing about it, particularly also since there isn't much research that needed to be done when you're writing about your own experiences. I had to learn to do a bit of research with the Krajina book because while I knew him personally and could throw in all sorts of stories, I had to go, and particularly the British Columbia part of it was quite a job because I know nothing about sciences, and I had to interview people and look through his papers as such. For example, there is a lot of correspondence about the ecological reserves, which at times are quite interesting. There is one somewhere in the Okanagan that has been chosen because it has all these rattlesnakes, different types of rattlesnakes in it. So I don't think that I'll be visiting that one, and I think it has a sort of a self-guarding border around it as such. But I had to do an awful lot of research, and that was good for me too, a little bit of work.
You know, you knew Havel. You went to school with him, and you worked with him when he became president. He met Krajina to give him that award, right?
Yes, he met Krajina one day, and as they were talking, he said, "Hey, you should be getting this. So you come in next week. You should be getting the White Lion." And so he and by that time he had one made and readied for Vladimir Kraina and presented it to him. Havel made these decisions quite quickly, and he saw that this was a representative of a generation that should be rewarded over there, and that goes to his to favor Havel as a president.
Did he know Kraina very closely? Was he influenced by him?
No, I don't think so. I think that Kraina was known as a name, but I think it must have been encouraging for Havel, because he was hated by the communists so much, and so Havel felt a certain kinship with Kraina. But no, I don't think they knew each other. They knew too much about each other before.
When he went back in 1990, was that the first time that he'd been back since the 40s?
Yeah, since 1948, since February 1948, yeah.
Well, what did he think of his country and where it had gone in those 50 years or so?
Well, he was, at that time, I don't think any of us were thinking too much about what had happened as looking forward. This was, you must remember, the third time that Kraina had seen his country gain freedom. He had, the first time was in after Austria-Hungary in 1918, the second time in 1945 when the Germans were defeated, and he lived to see it the third time. So he was, I think, just as elated as we all were when we first got there the first time, and we realized that the country looked pretty damn shabby at the time. But we said, hey, if you got faith in the Czechs, they will make it. And they have, and they have certainly improved Prague immensely.
Do you go back regularly?
I haven't been back for about 2 years now, but I would like to go back again. They're having some political problems and economic problems now, too. But unfortunately, the communists are gaining a little bit. They're still legal over there, which is a lot of people are rolling their eyes and saying, you know, we didn't make the Nazis legal after World War II.
Yeah.
Why make the communists?
Yeah. It's just been a fascinating conversation with you today, Jan. I appreciate your time today. And I understand you have this memoir coming out in the summer, right?
Yes, it's called Up to My Ears in America. It's coming out with Dana Inc. Publications in the United States, and we'll see how it does.
Oh, you're welcome to come on when that book comes out. I'd love to talk to you about that.
Okay, thank you.
This is a fascinating book and highly recommended. Do pick it up. The website for more insight is jandrabik.com. The book is called Vladimir Kraina, World War II Hero and Ecology Pioneer. It's published by Ronsdale Press. Its author, Jan Drabik, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunter.